Apex Express, Asian Pacific Expression.
Community and cultural coverage.
Music and calendar.
New visions and voices.
Coming to you with an Asian Pacific Islander point of view.
It's time to get on board the Apex Express.
Good evening. You're tuned into Apex Express Radio. We are bringing you an Asian and Asian American view from the Bay Area and around the world. I'm your host, Paige Chung, and this is Acre Thursday. Acre, Asian American for Civil Rights and Equality. And we're highlighting one of our 11 organizations, Asian Prisoner Support Committee, aka APSC. For those of you who don't know, APSC has been around since 2002, serves direct support to Asian prisoners, and to raise awareness about the growing number of Asian prisoners, Asian Pacific Islanders in prison, detained, and deported.
Is that James Fox? Hey, what's up, brother?
Hey, Key, how you doing, man?
Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Hey, PJ.
Hey, James.
Yeah.
Howdy. Yeah.
Hey, James. We got to get on that yoga soon.
Oh, hey! Got to get you guys on the mat.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah.
I missed it, man. It's been a long time.
Yeah, still doing it. It'll be 20 years in about, no, this month. It marks 20 years.
Wow.
Wow.
I still never forget about the breath, James.
All right. Yeah. I got you on video talking about that.
Yeah.
Kelly, hi friends, starting to join us too. We're going to be starting actually 5 after the hour. So yeah, just feel free to relax a bit before we get our panel started.
I totally was playing music intentionally.
That's okay. We have 1-ish minute left. So just for folks to know, yeah, we'll get started off. It's okay.
Super excited about tonight. Glad everyone was able to come through tonight. Should be an awesome panel.
Yeah, lots of folks. And also just letting people know, this is also live on Facebook, which means that there are other people joining us just on a okay, it's 6:05. Okay, APSC 3, how are you feeling? Are we, do you feel ready to get started?
The old hip hop song said, let's turn this party out.
All right, sounds good. All right, cool. Hi, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the APSC 3 panel. My name is Victoria. I'm a volunteer, and I'm going to be your panel moderator for this afternoon. Can I get some folks in the, everyone in the chat, if you're joining us, just a quick hi and just tell us where you're tuning in from. Yeah. So I'm calling in from, for example, Oakland, where a lot of us are. Cool. And as you're introducing yourselves in the chat, yeah, we'll be hearing from the APSC 3, Key, Maria, and PJ, all staff members at APSC, all formerly incarcerated community members and community leaders now advocating against deportations. So yeah, hi everyone. We're going to be hearing from you three about your journeys to healing, your advocacy, and now your ongoing pardon campaigns. So as folks are introducing themselves from many different places, AC Berkeley, Union City, various orgs, stuff like that. Yeah, can I ask the APSC 3, can you start by introducing yourselves too?
Hey everyone, thanks for the intro, Victoria. My name is Key. I go by he, him pronouns. I'm the program facility manager at APSC. I've been with APSC for, 6 years now. I'll pass it to Maria.
Hi, thank you, Key. My name is Maria, pronouns she, her, and I'm the reentry intern for APSC, and I've been with APSC for 2 years now. And I'm going to pass it on to PJ.
Thank you, Maria. I am PJ and the community advocate with the Asian Prison Support Committee, and I have been with APSC for over 3 years now. I go by he, him, his.
Cool. Thank you, everyone. Let's get started jumping into some of our questions for today. Thanks, everyone, also for introducing themselves in the chat. It's just, yeah, seeing a big firestorm of support. So thanks, everyone. Yeah. So let's get started. Can I ask you three to talk about first, our first question, how did you become involved with APSC? And I'll ask Maria to start.
Yeah, I can answer that. So my involvement with APSC started back in 2019, but I was introduced to APSC in 2017. I wrote ALC for legal assistance. What's going to happen after I get my board date, my parole grant? And so that's how it all started. And in 2019, after I got transferred from prison to Adelanto Detention Center, Nia was also working at ALC as a community advocate, and she asked APSC to help support me while I was there. And when I was in Adelanto, I was at my CAT hearing when APSC showed up and filled up the hearing room. They packed it. And I can't describe to you all how my heart was just overwhelmed with joy, because looking behind me, there was a group of people, right? They didn't know me, but they traveled hundreds of miles to just support me. And at that time, I was at the lowest point because I was in this battle alone. And I was fighting for my life to stay in the United States. So when I left the hearing, the guard told me, this has never happened before in all my years working here at GEO. And that created a lasting imprint in me. And that started that fire, that fight to keep fighting. And so that's how I got involved with APSC. When they had the internship program, I jumped on it. And I was very fortunate to be part of it. And now I'm here at APSC to continue the work that was given to me. I paid forward, and I help people coming home find their fight, their battle with immigration, and finding their place here in our society. So,
that's beautiful. Thank you, Maria. Yeah, Key, PJ, do you want to share how you got involved with APSC?
Yeah, I do actually. So my journey started when I was in Solano, and I joined a lot of programs to help unpack masculinity and trauma, and it changed my life around. And I went back to school, got my trade, and started like really doing a lot of positive investment in my own self, because I wanted to give back to my community, become a healer. And then partly because I felt accountable, I learned about accountability and how my crime have impacted my community. And so I wanted to give back and provide some healing to my community. And so I went on this journey of just living a positive life. And then through that journey, my counselor at the time saw what I was doing, and she sent me to San Quentin. She said, you know what, you should go to San Quentin because there's a lot of opportunity there, and that's what you want to do. So I ended up in San Quentin, and I met APSC at the health fair. And it was the first time I had a model like of community support, because growing up, I never seen it. And in prison, definitely you don't see that. It doesn't happen. So Ben and Cassie was there as the leader at the time of leading the health fair. And I was really impressed by them. And I was really inspired. And so I wanted to get involved. And so I joined the team, and I've been with them since. I think I went to ICE when I got parole for 18 months. APSC launched a pardon campaign for me. You know, sent letters to me, lobbied the community on my behalf. And I got out. And so I got out and I joined the team as staff. And I was the reentry navigator, helping with folks in reentry. And now I'm the community advocate. So I'm working in reforming criminal justice system and stopping the deportation machine. And that's my quick journey with APSC.
That was awesome, Maria and PJ. Very similar in some sense. I think it was in 2009, I was at San Quentin State Prison. We had a health fair for another group. And then with the health fair, we had all of like different folks from Alameda County come in for health, getting blood pressure. We had Tai Chi. And it was weird because we normally don't see Asian that comes in to programs like that. And I saw Eddie, Ben, Cassie, and a couple other folks. And I heard a lot of story about, especially about Eddie, how he went to AgSeg. And then talking to them, they're like, hey, we want to start a cultural group focused around Asian and Pacific Islander history and values. I'm like, oh, that sounds dope. Throughout the health field, we just talked about that program. And for many years, we were just working on developing a curriculum. And then finally in 2013, we started a pilot program called Roots, Restoring Our Original True Self. And it's been going since 2013. Oh, hundreds of guys graduated from that program. I remember that first program, like no one wanted to stop the program. It was a 9-month program and it went over a year. But one thing that was great is that APSC has been, and then after I got found suitable for parole, I was handed over to immigration. APSC stood with me. They came to visit me when I was all the way down south in Adelanto and even in the county jail in Orange County. And they supported me throughout the whole process. And even when I got out, they was there for me. And it was funny because Ben said, hey, you want to work for APSC? I said, you guys don't even have funding right now. I ended up just volunteering with them. And then in 2017, was able to get enough funding where I was able to be hired as staff and with a few other folks with PJ alone. And so it's been a great journey and I'm happy to be part of APSC.
Thanks, everyone. So sorry, there is a very loud car driving by me, if you can hear it. But yeah, thank you. Thank you, Ruben, for sharing. Just hearing your stories makes me think about how you all embody so much of APSC's mission. People don't talk a lot about Asian folks who are inside or incarcerated, and thinking about you all as immigrants and refugees from Cambodia, Vietnam, and the Philippines, having support from advocates and now becoming leaders yourselves too. So I wanted to go a little bit deeper with you all. What do you currently do with APSC and what communities do you serve?
I can go first. So I'm currently working as a community advocate with APSC, and my work include being representing APSC in organization spaces, like coalition spaces, doing lobby visit, any event related to reentry programming, helping with the anti-deportation defense. I also conduct a lot of workshop around APSC program and mission to youth, students, and the community and an organization throughout the Bay Area. Outside of APSC, I work with the New Light program at Siri. My work with New Light includes supporting mental health and healing for folks who've been deported. And my community are my family, my Southeast Asian elders and youth at Siri's, the incarcerated folks healing from trauma, and my GRIP family. You know, it's been my journey. I say heal people. So that's what I've been on.
That was dope, PJ. My story is that I started out as the reentry coordinator. I came out as a juvenile lifer. So I went in there when I was 17 years old. And I came out as an adult. And there was no one that was there to help me navigate the life of being an adult. And it was great when APSC, like, hey, would you be the reentry coordinator to help folks navigate the process that you learned? And I'm like, yeah, most definitely. If it's something I could do for the community and give back, like, I'm definitely down for it. And so I've been doing that for years. And it's just like a year ago, I got promoted to program manager and facility manager, where now I still oversee reentry services for folks that's coming home, especially young folks. it's so crucial to have somebody that had that lived experience to help somebody else that's coming home to deal with these things. And it's been so hard. But one of the great privileges is that I'm able to do that. But also I get to do what I love to do. I love to fix things. So they say, hey, you can maintain our facility. I'm like, sure, cool, great. Can I have a budget? They're like, yeah, we give you a budget. Not much, but we give you a budget. So it was dope to have that. I think about my community, like, who do I serve? Oh my God, like I serve anyone that's need help. It doesn't matter. You're formerly incarcerated. You're not incarcerated. If your family members that's impacted by the system. So one of the things I've been doing with all my life is just, I love my bikes. I give out. So since I've been home, I gave out over 600 bikes to anybody that needed one. So it's been a privilege. And my community is my family, my dogs, my formerly incarcerated young folks, and just everybody. Maria.
Thank you, Keith. And my name's Maria, and I'm a reentry intern for APSC. And it's funny because PJ and Key were there during my reentry, and they helped me navigate my place in, what am I going to do, Key? What am I going to do, PJ? Because I don't have any of these. So what now? And because of the compassion and the support that I got from them, that's the whole reason why I jumped into that internship program when they offered it. And being the first reentry female intern, I was able to uplift the needs of the women coming home because there's not a lot of resources for women here in the Bay Area. And so giving light to, okay, this is what we need because men's needs are different from the women, and women coming home are mothers, daughters and sisters and wives, and what can we offer them? So part of who I serve are the women that are coming home, the women that are still incarcerated, the women that are still detained. And I help them when they come home, find resources. Some of them are on probation, some are on parole, some may not qualify for resources that are offered by the county or the state. So my job is to help them find the resources, assist them so that they don't go back to that cycle that they're used to, because this time they have somebody to help them get through it. And what are my current passions? I love crocheting. So in 2015, one of the ladies, she asked if I was willing to volunteer for the prison program where we have a sponsor and they deliver the yarn to us. And the goal was to knit, crochet blankets, beanies, and scarves for the community, the babies, the premature babies, the convalescent homes for my elders and the veterans. And so over the course of 6 years, while we were the overseer, we pretty much donated to all of Central Valley, Bay Area, and now we donate to the homeless in San Francisco and most of the homeless shelters here in the Bay Area. My people are the women and my friends and families who adopted me when I felt like I was alone and I didn't have a family, and the faith leaders. Because they fight for us without judging my past. And those are the people I serve in my community.
All three of you. Yeah, it's always wonderful hearing so much about your... Yeah, I think a huge part of what makes APSC special is exactly what you all shared. And is also that knowing that it's a space where impacted people are at the forefront of our movements, right? You three are all really incredible and so knowledgeable as organizers because of your lived experiences. And that's how you help so many people. So I wanted to ask a bit more specifically about how your life and your experiences have shaped your work and how you understand a lot of like different community issues now. So this first question is for Maria, actually. Like within the prison system, women are an underserved population and they have experienced really specific issues, for example, being criminalized and punished for surviving abuse or having other issues related to reproductive and gender justice. Yeah, so I was curious to ask, how do your unique life experiences as someone who was formerly incarcerated as a Philippine immigrant, how does that inform how you now serve your community?
When I was in detention, I saw a lot of women exploited, and it made me upset because they were mothers, they were daughters, and they were survivors of violence, sexual abuse, human trafficking. And because they didn't have a voice, they didn't know how to speak up for themselves, they just signed their deportation papers and then coming back to the unit crying because they signed their lives away. They didn't know what they were signing because those people were nice to them. Oh no, just sign it. This is what's going to happen. It'll be all easy. And it didn't sit right with me. And so I found a way to speak my broken Spanish or find somebody that speaks Korean, Vietnamese, and no, this is what we're going to do. We're going to let them know they do not sign this. And it's okay to say no. Just if they ask you, do you speak English? No. When they ask you, do you want to sign it? No. Giving them that tool that they can say no is a way that they can voice and can be heard, because they'll pressure you. But if nobody tells them this, they would never know. And that's one way I know, because I learned to find my voice in my journey in prison. And as a formerly incarcerated, undocumented Southeast Asian Filipina immigrant, the challenges in my reentry was very difficult. Not only do I have to deal with the shame around being incarceration, being detained and incarcerated, I didn't have any identification. I didn't have social security card. And so I couldn't access resources to help me reenter society. And I couldn't even get medical care because I didn't have an immigration status. All I had was a state prison ID, a parolee memo, and an ankle monitor. So how do I use these experiences? By being an example to my people that I'm not giving up. And instead of being ashamed because of what I don't have, that I'm like a ghost walking with no identification saying who I am. No, I'm going to own it because this is me. This is Maria, not a piece of paper, not a piece of card. So if I can do that, so can you. Just because they told me I can't doesn't mean I can't achieve it, right? So today I can walk around with an ID. Did it make a difference? Yes. Because now I can show for, yeah, this is Maria and this is my card saying that I am who I am. And my ankle monitor, when I go to the grocery stores and they see my ankle monitor, they grab their children away from me because they think of something that I'm not. But then I use it as a talking piece. ICE tagged me as a property. And I'm pretty sure you're an immigrant, so you know how that feels. But it's okay because I'm here representing my people. That we too have a place in society. And because I know I'm not alone, I'm able to speak on it. You know, my challenges turns into victories. And when people come home and they have the challenges I have, I can walk them through it easily because I made it happen for me. So reminding my people that they don't have to do it alone, that's what needs to continue. That's how we build that systemic healing. When we don't give up on each other and we work together as a community. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you, Maria. We're so grateful for you. Yeah. Feel free, everyone, to share like love and support for anything folks are saying in the chat. Yeah, thank you. My next question is for PJ. Yeah, I wanted to ask you to talk about what are some of the systemic impacts of being incarcerated as a juvenile lifer?
Yeah, for a juvenile lifer, it's hard in prison. I think it's probably harder than any person, and partly because we're younger, right? We're younger, we're smaller than everyone else in there. We're vulnerable. We're vulnerable to manipulation. We're vulnerable to become a victim of violence and sexual assault. And as a youth, like, you can't show fear. Like, you got to act tough. You got to be tough, because if you don't, then people will come and try to victimize you. So I witnessed so many of my friends get lost in the system, because they have to prove themselves, and they end up getting more time, getting involved in crimes, getting involved in prison, getting involved in stabbing, just to prove themselves, right? Or to fight for their life. And because I've even like witnessed rape, see people in prison being raped, and then dude come out and then someone tell them, hey man, you can't let that happen. They're gonna keep raping you, so you gotta go do something. And I watch, it's a cold place, and being a juvenile lifer is a dark place. And for the life of me, I couldn't fathom this, like how our system could do this to youth. Like, I remember a guy, he was at a canteen line, 16 years old, first time in prison. He should have been somewhere else, but he's in prison. And he couldn't buy a cigarette. He's sitting there waiting in the window for getting his canteen. And then he's looking for a cigarette. And the guy said, you can't have it. You're too young. But yet he's on adult prison, like in the same yard with all these adults. So for us, you know, like how we get treated is much different, which is not treated. It's different by the system. We're treated different by the people around us. And we don't get the same privilege. I think like, I was fortunate. I was able to get involved in the program. And I was one of those youth. I had to prove myself tough. I had to do things that I regretted till today. And I had to talk about at the board hearing. And I'm ashamed of, right? But I needed to survive. Like, I needed to survive prison. Otherwise, I'd become a victim or I'd die in prison. So being a youth, you get treated differently. And fortunately, I was able to turn my life around to my process and through where I was at, and have the elders who supported me, allowed me to do my time, allowed me to participate in the program, allowed me to re-alter my trajectory of my life. So I was able to come to San Quentin, get an education, get back to my community, and come home. But I have friends right now who I looked up to today. I go online and I go to the CDCR inmate lookup and I check on them, like, where are they at? Because they didn't make it. A lot of them didn't make it. They didn't make it because the system isn't designed to treat youth that way, like to allow us to be youth. You know, they're treating us as an adult. And then, but we're not. Our mind is not fully developed, but then we end up in prison. So for youth, it's hard. It's hard in a lot of different ways. And I think other people have even worse experience than I did. But I think I count myself as the most fortunate one. But the truth of the matter is most youth doesn't make it in prison. The first 4 years in prison defines your outcome of your life. And if you get lucky, you make it. If you don't get lucky, you get another life sentence and you're just stuck in prison forever. So yeah, the system is jacked up. Our system is really jacked up. And I'm glad that SB 260, 261, SB 9 has passed, giving folks an opportunity now to earn parole and to be treated differently and to be acknowledged that we're different. But like the bill came out late, right? Like it's just more recent that the bill come out in the last few years, but we're spending decades and decades in prison and getting lost in a system that doesn't care.
Yeah. I hear you, PJ. Thank you for sharing. My next question is for Key, but it's relevant. Obviously, all these questions are so relevant to one another too. I wanted to ask Key, how do you support other formerly incarcerated youth and people who've experienced the same things that PJ just talked about? How do you support young folks to reenter society after experiencing those things?
So I want folks to think about, when we talk about youth, I don't want to just talk about the age factor. I want to talk about the mindset as well, because there's folks that have been incarcerated for 30, 40, 50 years. And prison is like a time capsule. Nothing really changed in there. Everything's basically Stone Age still. And it's hard for folks, especially doing the same program routine day over and day out. People become numb to that process of being incarcerated. They become molded into a certain phase. I'm like PJ, I want to emphasize one thing like PJ didn't, I want to highlight is that one thing about prison is it makes us very numb to intimacy. Like we are prevented to learn about intimacy. Like in a visiting room, you can't touch your family. Or you can't even hug your mom that long when she comes in, or your wife or your child. And so like when young folks come home, they're stuck in this time capsule. And it's so hard for them to to navigate now. And I feel like it's such a privilege and honor and a blessing for me to be able to be that person that could meet them at the gate, that could meet them for their first meal, that could meet them to help them take them shopping. I remember like for my first time, when I came home, I broke my neck in Walmart because I was so busy looking at something, but my body kept moving, but my head was stuck on something. And I realized I'm not alone in that situation. And I remember when I took one guy to the grocery store, and it took him half an hour to decide on what cereal he wanted to eat. He was a juvenile lifer too. He was just standing there like stuck. Can you make a decision? He said, I don't know how. Because in prison, choices are made for us. We don't get to make, our choices are very limited. Limited to like when we can shower, when we can eat, when we can see our family, when we can make a phone call, like everything is limited. So when somebody come home, like all these choices, like what did they do? They don't know. Especially for somebody that's similar to myself and PJ and Maria, like coming straight from prison and getting transferred right over to immigration and coming out and dealing with that process, we don't have no birth certificate, we had no social security card, like nothing. And especially coming as a juvenile lifer, coming out as a juvenile and learning to adulthood, is like, how do I get my ID since I don't have all these things that I need? I need a birth certificate, I need a social, I don't have that. What do I do? And I was able to find a process where I could help folks that don't have the right document get at least a California ID, and then work their way up to getting a driver's license. And then the other part is like, they had to go through immigration checking like myself and PJ and Maria, and like scared, mindless, going through that process. If I go in there, they detain me again. And then having being able to get advocates on their behalf to show up, not just by myself, but with other folks, because I'm scared to go checking with them too, because I don't know what might happen to me. And so bring other people in to provide that support. And one thing I've been out for 6 years now, and sometimes I catch myself like, it's so easy to take things for granted, all right? Open up a refrigerator, driving a car, It's like little simple things like we don't have in prison. And I realized that. And then they go through that same process. They get stuck and they like, man, I just need somebody to talk to. And then I know that doing this work, there's less people are so grateful for that support because they're like, man, if I didn't have you, I probably would have went back to prison because my family don't understand me. The community don't understand me. And people that are coming out, they just don't know how to express, especially men or boys that's coming out, don't know how to fully express their needs because we've been so conditioned or institutionalized. So like, it's hard. And then like, we need support of the community to help with that as well. And also to understand the expectation that we might have on them to be a better son, to be a better daughter. It's not always that easy, especially dealing with years of incarceration. And so I'm really happy to share more about that later on.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Key. Thanks so much, everyone, man. I remember we were talking in one of our campaign meetings about how other places don't have support systems like APSS, and they don't have like the resources that you'll provide and the understanding that you have for other impacted people. So it's just so invaluable, and it's tough to ever take that for granted. Yeah, I wanted to also ask you as well, California can do a lot of different things to support folks like you, right? So with the governor's support, for example, the APSC3 could win their pardons, continue their work without the constant fear of deportation. Our campaign isn't just about you three, it's about all criminalized immigrants and refugees in the state too. So I wanted to ask you all right now, what could Governor Gavin Newsom do to protect immigrants and refugees?
I think one way Governor Newsom can show support for formerly incarcerated immigrants and refugees is by granting mass clemency for all of us coming home. I'm not sure how folks are familiar with the LIFR process, but juvenile LIFRs and LIFRs in general. So we go through this rigorous process of being evaluated by state-appointed psychiatrists, psychologists to assess whether we're a threat or not. It's a comprehensive risk assessment, and each lifer that goes to board goes through that. And they prepare for it. They prepare years of rehabilitation for it to even be deemed worthy of having that parole hearing. And so for people like us that go through that program, it's very important for folks to know that it's not just a one-day preparation, right? So Governor Newsom also appoints a group of commissioners, right? He gives them this authority to determine whether we're a threat or a danger to society. So the commissioners that heard us on our parole hearing deemed us that we're no longer a threat and we have been rehabilitated. And we've changed our lives, our ways, our mind frame, our thinking, our lifestyle. And we could be productive members of society given the chance to prove it that, look, it worked. Your programs work. It helped us because we put our hard work into it. Unfortunately, the parole grant, the parole affirmation from the governor, right, giving us that parole grant, it doesn't extend once we leave those prison walls. It stops there. It's okay, I gave you your program, good luck. And that's what's been happening. We've been transferred to ICE. And one way is he can exercise that authority, that power that was vested in him to grant that mass clemency so we can have that chance, that equal chance like the other parolees. We put in the same work. We put in the time for it. So open up, pave that way for us returning citizens, immigrants, and refugees. And one more thing, you know, when the day, and on the day of freedom, right? On the day of freedom outside those walls, instead of the parolees, us being reunited with our loved ones, we're greeted by code shackles. I was greeted by code shackles on my feet, handcuffs, chained to my waist. That's how freedom greeted me that day. And Governor Newsom could stop that from happening for other refugee and immigrant people that are coming home. Our lifers, our folks that are coming home from prison. And the one last thing, the clemency from the governor, right? His power to grant us that second chance and reestablishing ourselves like with a clean slate. It's also for our families. pardon for us is clemency for our families and our communities, because they stood by our side doing the life sentence with us. And that's a lot, Victoria. Guys, that's a lot. They stood by our sides for 20 years, taking care of us, sending us boxes, sending us letters and mail. So if Governor Newsom really wants to help the families and the community, use that power, use that authority to stop that cycle of trauma and hurt that our families and our communities are sucked back into by not letting our immigrant families and refugees reunite.
You're tuned into Apex Express on 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley and online at kpfa.org.
Next up, we have Dumbfounded's History of Violence.
Violence is an addiction. Violence won't listen. We can wish for peace. We can speak violence into existence. Violence is tradition.
God bless America.
Like the goat, history of violence, ho. Blood on the deed of her home. So glad pops ain't show me the ropes. I ain't never raised my hand to a woman or in class, won't obey no man. Prayer's been ignored by the prophets, so I've been at war with the world like John Wick. I don't play that gook or the chink shit, got me hot like the hood of my Lincoln. I was giving out the link in my bio when they thought that I was giving my LinkedIn. My culture don't believe in shrinks like we riding with invisible ink. So I've been going off with a Virginia Tech flow. I leave this behind as the manifesto. Little homie, running up on the bigger homie. Little homie, wonder why the parents split up on me. Little homie, got history like you roll with Coney. Little homie, I'm treating POTUS like little homie. Paranoia, pushing him to another level. Paranoia, finding peace inside a cigarillo. Been killing since putting my feelings under pillows. Made a demon from a devil.
We have Dumbfounded's History of Violence. Welcome back. You are tuned into Apex Express on 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley and online at kpfa.org. You just listened to Dumbfounded's History of Violence.
Thank you, Maria. Yeah, I want to just share also one of the things that Governor Newsom can do is support, send a bill like the Vision Act, bills that what Maria is talking about is like stopping ICE transfer, stopping state agency working with ICE, and collaborating and filtering people more into trauma. Because as a person, like for me, I went through ICE. I was a transfer, and I felt that cold shackle that morning when I was supposed to go home, but I didn't. I ended up in the ICE custody again, and then going through the whole trauma, 18 months. Like I put my family through some stuff, like it's unbelievable. And it's like, for me, like my family has gone through trauma like, as a refugee, enduring genocide, enduring family separation, and then lead up to my incarceration. That was like an ongoing process, and it didn't stop. And I think the Vision Act not only would give us an opportunity to like really stop the trauma, like we can reunite with our family finally and not being further putting them into more trauma, but it also gave us a fair chance at a legal system. Like right now, ICE has used detention center to make people sign the documentation and they get deported. And so for us, we're still dealing with the court system. We're just asking for a fair chance. Come home to our family, like we would have been able to actually fight our case from home. And a lot of my friends got deported because of that. Like they signed because the Vision Act wasn't passed and it didn't protect them. So they end up in Cambodia and Thai and in other countries in Vietnam. But I think it was disappointing too. Like the Vision Act should have passed on the Senate floor yesterday. Like a lot of people support the Vision Act. Like I think community knows there's over 300 faith leaders who support the Vision Act, 200 organization, a large, like thousands of people have signed to support the Vision Act. Like it's a large number of coalition, and the senator yesterday could have passed the Vision Act. Like they could have stopped the continuation of trauma for Southeast Asian community. Like for me, like I was disappointed because Senator Ekman was one of those persons. Like she's, as a longtime Stockton resident, family still live in Stockton. I go visit my mom in Stockton. My brother, nephew cousin, everyone live in Stockton. Like, I was disappointed, man. Like, I feel like she just forgot about us. Like, she's claimed to be a social worker in her background. And she's from Stockton. Like, she should know, like, our community have endured trauma even after, like, we all resettlement. I was experienced a school shooting, the highest of discrimination, Asian hate crime now. But I lived through that. Like, I watched my cousin die on the playground. I watched my neighbor get shot. And a lot of us didn't feel safe. Like, that school shooting changed everything for us. It changed our how we see yourself, even like in the country. I didn't just feel safe. I felt unwanted. I felt like I don't belong. And the bullying happens often. And so I think like that, like a lot of the community members who went through the shooting, like they all up in prison. People I've known who were victim all up in prison. Like, it took us a long time to heal, to change our life around, to come home. And then again, like we're back to ICE and getting deported, another life sentence. So I felt that a lot of senators, just they're talking about the constituent, they want to serve the constituent. But what about us? We're the constituent too. Like, how come we don't matter? So, I don't know. I felt betrayed, man. Like, that whole thing was a nightmare. And I'm very disappointed. Yeah, I feel like Southeast Asians shouldn't have to go through trauma a whole life simply because we're immigrants. Yeah. So what I think my voice is that I think we matter. And I think these leaders need to see that we do matters because we're not alone. Like, we have community that's still going through it. My family's still going through it. And I just want it to end. When do the trauma end for us?
That's deep, PJ. Thank you for sharing, man. Thank you for being vulnerable. You too, Maria. Now, I'm feeling a little emotional about this right now. Wow. So I just want to take a quick breath, just to take it all in, because that was heavy. So when I think about immigrants, when I think about refugee, I think about all of us, no matter what color or nationality you are. This country was built on the backs of immigrants and refugees. If we to study the history of America, when somebody say get out of the country, it's wow. Basically, you're telling all of us to get out of the country. And so I'd like to talk real quick. I want to highlight somebody, a story of my friend Poon. He was a good friend of mine. He made great strides in the life to change. He was deemed by the governor as not a threat to public safety and eligible for parole. But instead of being paroled, like, you know, similar to me and PJ and Maria, he got handed over to immigration custody. He was a juvenile lifer. People don't understand. He went through the gang lifestyle. He grew up being bullied, grew up dealing with the struggle of fitting into a culture. He fit right into the pipeline, the migration to schools, to prisons, and deportation pipeline. Now he's deported back in Cambodia to a country he knows nothing about. It's like for one of us to be deported to Antarctica or something, to another country where we don't speak the language, we don't know the culture. So to him, it's a culture shock. But the governor could have stopped all this. The governor could have helped push the Vision Act and passed it where Putin would have been deported to Cambodia. He wouldn't have got the direct transfer to ICE. But instead, he didn't. Right? He chose not to. But the governor could still do something now. The governor could actually, even though Putin is deported to Cambodia, if the governor pardoned him today, he has the ability to come back and return to his society. But not only that, his whole family's over here. And so, like, the governor could bring families together and keep families together, and also is a great asset to the community. He got multiple skills, and I think he could be a great value to especially our young folks, because he got locked up when he was young. So, like, his story matters. Like, it's like taking a bull elephant out of the tribe, and the young one's just going to go crazy. And so having the bull elephant back in is really going to make a difference. And so I think Poon is one of those examples. And the governor could do so much in his power. I know that he's got constituents. I know he has a lot of people breathing down his neck, but he could be a game changer. He could set milestones. He could start a new trend. And all it takes is for us to actually push him, to call him, to call his office. So we all have the ability and the power to do something. So I say, let your voice be heard. So speak up and shout out.
Thanks so much, everyone. Yeah, I wanted to know, I think too, is a couple things. It is, for me as a community advocate, it is so mind-blowing to think that people like Poon could come home just if the governor signed his name on one thing. And same goes for so many families could be reunited, so many people could return to their loved ones with such simple decisions that could be made for that too. But yeah, I was also, grateful to PJ for sharing about the Vision Act. I really appreciated what the ICE of California Coalition shared yesterday in their statement too, right? Was that it wasn't that the bill failed, it's that the California Senate and just failed to keep up with our community's vision for the future, where we all are going to be home with our families. So I want to transition to my last question for you all before we get to the audience. I wanted to ask you, what would it mean for you to be granted a pardon? What are you looking forward to most? And anyone can just go.
For me, the day I get the phone call from Governor Newsom and he tells me that I got my pardon, I'm gonna call my mom and dad and tell them that they can sleep better at night knowing that I'm not gonna get deported and they're not gonna worry whether I'm gonna come out safe from that plane or not. That would be the day when they can go to sleep. No, without worrying about me. Well, they're still going to worry about me because I'm their baby. Just to be able to say that, Mama, you don't have to worry, that would be the day. And also, a pardon would mean that I can go visit my family members that I haven't seen for a long time. And also, I want to get my social worker's license so that I can continue my work in my community so that nobody has to go through what we went through and make life easier for them. That would mean to me.
Dang, Maria White got go so deep. Man, give me the chills. You want to go, PJ?
Yeah, I've been dreaming about, like, I think about my mom a lot. So I dream about my mom a lot. And I always, when I was in prison, I always dream about her because my mom had gone through so much stuff. Like, I think when I was younger, I was just really trying to survive the country and I didn't really think much about her experience. I don't understand what her experience was like. I think more about my experience. She used to tell me stories, you know, about how she survived the Khmer Rouge and the genocide and what she had to go through, witnessing her whole family getting killed in front of her and tortured. And I remember growing up, like, feeling really dramatic. Like, I felt traumatized by those stories. So I have nightmares sometimes thinking about it. And when I go see her in Stockton now, I even hug her. I hug her and I feel like, I'm happy, I felt joy, but I also feel a lot of grief. I feel like, man, when will be the last time I hug my mom? I feel like my mom gone through with me, like, thick and thin, you know, like, through prison, when I've got found parole. My mom don't speak English, she don't understand the culture, like, a lot of dynamic, even though she's been here a long time. A lot of stuff just didn't make sense to her. First, she didn't understand why people go to prison when they're young, and they stay there for life. And then when I got found suitable, I told her, like, yeah, I got found suitable, that means I can come home. And she got hella joyful, and then realized that I have the ice hole, so I'm going to ICE. So she's like, man, what does that mean? I thought you were coming home. And then, like, now I'm home, I'm on ankle monitor. She's like, what is that? Like, what does that mean? Like, I thought you were free. I thought you have your freedom. I thought you earned it. And then the courts, and I went through the courts. So I keep, all this time, I keep telling her that, like, mom, it's over. It's not. It's over. Mom, it's not. It's over. Now I went to my in-bank hearing for my pardon. The board of parole hearing granted my, like, recommendation for pardon. So in my mom's mind, she's like, my son is finally free. Like, you don't have to worry about it no more. And then to find out that the Governor Brown, when he left office, he can't sign my pardon. So I feel like my mom is, I don't know how to tell her thing. Like, if I finally get a pardon from Governor Newsom, I can finally tell my mom it's over. It's over.
Thank you, PJ. Thank you, Maria. Two words come to my mind when I think about what does it mean to be granted a pardon. But one is security. Just like Maria, knowing that, no, I won't be taken away from my family and my community. And two, the second one is healing. If I get granted a pardon, I'm able to help my mom heal. She never got to pay respect to her parents who got murdered when we fled Vietnam. And so it'd be an opportunity for me to take my mom back to Vietnam and give that respect to her parents, and also for me to give my respect to my grandparents. And to visit a city that I don't know nothing about, but where I was born. And for me, it's an answer to a lot of questions I never knew.
that my mom could never share because she didn't know how. And so being able to have that pardon will allow me to bring not just healing to my family, but also to myself.
Thank you, everyone. Yeah, this is, I feel like we've shared so many really important, really wonderful, very deep, sometimes heavy things too. So I think before we turn it over for last Q&A things, I think I might just invite us to take a couple deep breaths. So just in your chair, relax, and then close your eyes if you want to, and then breathe in, and then breathe out. Just one more time, breathe in. Thank you, all three of you. Yeah, so in the last few minutes we have, let's turn it over to the audience. We have King monitoring the chat. So yeah, do folks have questions in the chat for the APC3?
Yes, someone messaged and asked, how do you find joy in your community work?
I wouldn't know where to start because I have so many great stories of folks like jumping for joy, just being able to get an ID, California ID. Like for me, that's so much. I know the struggle that I've been there. And like, that's like the first step to being independent, but also connecting to my community again, being able to give back. And so that's just one moment. There is thousands of other moments. Another one is when somebody take their first bike ride, first pedal on their bike that I gave them, and saying, I just talked to a guy earlier. He's, man, that bike is so much freedom to me. Like I could just ride and just be free again, not worry about I have to pay bills, and I could just enjoy life and nature, the actual things of being free.
Yeah, I think I can echo what Key said. I think there's a lot to be grateful for. I think I've always been a person who's grateful. I just grateful to be alive. But I think like in my work with APSC and even with Syria, man, we did the rally in Sacramento, and then we have the elders show up, the youth show up to support our community members who's being threatened for deportation. Seeing them dance, man, like seeing my elder dance was a huge, like for me, it was like a moment of just sheer joy. Because I remember I walked into Syria one day and I saw my elders like dancing to Cambodian music. And I haven't heard Cambodian music in a long time because in prison, it's hard to get it. But watching them dance, like I saw the healing, like here's survivor of a genocide who've gone through so much in their life, and they're all dancing to Cambodian song. And just it reminded me of like, it rooted my own culture, like the culture, but I really love what I was seeing. And I think like getting wind, you know, hearing people come home, coming back home from Cambodia, getting wind, you know, like people getting pardons. I think like that gave me hope. That does give me hope. I think like also, I think the joy is like, when I teach, when I go and do presentation to the students in the university, like watching their light bulb goes up, like we don't just read about textbook, but you meet people and you hear the experience, like life experience of what it's like for the 1.5 generation, like 1.3 generation, or just folks who have gone through this experience. And I think I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful not just for myself, but I'm hopeful for a society that someday like the youth would just get up and they're the future. And I think they're gonna make the changes that I hope to see and that I want to see. And I think I'm doing my part. I think that's the beauty, that I'm get to do my part on shaping those futures. So yeah, those coalition calls, running those events, doing those workshops, for me it's been a joy. And it's been to connect, because I learned so much from being in the community. And I think like maybe that is the big message for me. Like I have not felt community in a long time, and I never felt safe in a long time. So I feel like being in this space make me feel safe, make me feel like there's a community. So yeah.
I think for me, it's every day when I get a client to answer their phone and I get to do a check-in with them, that just makes my day, because I know that what I say to them can brighten up their day. Everybody has a struggle, right? And every day it's different. But I know the simple hello and hi and smile emoji can make a difference. So that brings me joy. And I know I'm in the right, I know I'm where I'm supposed to be at today. And when Yeah.
Thank you. I see Mac also put in the chat, Maria, remember, how many lives did you touch today and how many people do you help every day?
I feel Victoria, like- I was hoping to make a remark before that. My name is Mac and I'm a felon. Been a felon since I was a child. I've had the mark of a criminal record since I was a teen, and that's my life. When I got out, and I preface this to say, a lot of times we don't talk about how many people we help. And it just gets normalized for these three that the amount of humans they help. So when I got out, I was a monster. I was good at the practice of violence in prison and it kept me alive. And I felt like a monster. Society looked at me like a monster. But when I got home and I saw Key and PJ and Maria, and they made me feel at home, that you know what? That there's another life. And when I see PJ, I emulate that. I want to be nice like him. But they caged me for so long that my sky is gray. And a lot of times we don't talk about the people we help. And Maria, my question to you is, how many people do you help a day? How many people did you help today?
I helped 10 people today.
You touched their lives today.
I'm happy doing that. If that's my job for the rest of my life, then that's my purpose.
We have, yeah, so it's just a couple minutes after two, so we got to close out just to respect folks' times and so you can get back to your evening. But yeah, thank you everyone for asking your questions. Thank you to the APSC3 so much for spending time talking to us and sharing your experiences today. And yeah, I just wanted to hand it over out for some thank yous and acknowledgements from us all.
Thanks, everyone. We'll be closing out now.
Thank you all.
Thank you so much for joining us. Please check out our website, kpfa.org/program/Apex Express, to find out more about the show tonight and to find out how you can take direct action. We thank all of you listeners out there. Keep resisting, keep organizing, keep creating and sharing your visions with the world. Your voices are important. Apex Express is produced by Miko Lee, Jelena Keenly, and Paige Chung, and special editing by Swati Rayasam. Thank you so much to the KPFA staff for their support. Have a great night.
Apex Express, Asian Pacific Expression.